fewer people are choosing college as an option. What are the ramifications? Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez.
We have shifted the allocation of financial aid from more merit-based to more need-based aid so we can attract a broader socioeconomic background of student.
That's the University of Miami making adjustments to try and keep enrollment high. Nationwide, colleges and universities have seen a million fewer students enrolling. Some higher ed experts believe this could have consequences for the workforce down the road. We have a panel of local higher ed figures to discuss the current trends, and we want to hear from you. Are you reconsidering college, maybe for a year or for something else? Also, we introduce you to WLRN's new education reporter, Kate Payne. All of that today on Sundial after the news. The program is made possible in part by support from Miami Cancer Institute. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for joining us. Nationwide, college enrollment is low. More than a million fewer students are enrolled in college now than before the pandemic began. NPR reports that, according to new data released last week, U.S. colleges and universities saw a drop of nearly 500,000 undergraduate students in the fall of 2021. And that continues a historic decline that began the previous fall. What does the national trend for college enrollment actually look like across South Florida? We're going to turn to a panel of enrollment administrators who are joining us live. I want to introduce them now. Maura Flaschner is the Executive Director of Undergraduate Admission at Florida Atlantic University. Maura, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. Also joining us is Janice Stubbs. She's Broward College's Vice President of Student Services. Janice, great to have you.
Thank you for having me, Lewis.
Dr. Frank Wood is the Vice President of Advancement at the College of the Florida Keys. Dr. Wood, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Good afternoon.
And Dr. Ken Furton is the Provost at Florida International University. Dr. Furton, also a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
So, you know, again, I say more than a million fewer students are enrolled in college now than before the pandemic began. Now, earlier this morning, we spoke with John Haller. He's the Vice President for Enrollment Management at the University of Miami. And this is what he said about it.
University of Miami right now is in a place where interest in the university is an all-time high. And for example, this past year for incoming class fall 2022, university received in excess of 49,000 applications, which is up 16% from the prior year, which was an all-time high the prior year as well.
All right. So nationwide, it's low, but he's saying things are better. So that's why I want to look at South Florida and see what's really happening down here. Maura, let me start with you at FAU. Enrollment up? Is it down? What's going on right now?
Well, I think interest in enrolling is very strong. We're seeing strong application numbers for both first year and transfer students. I think that our students and families, when it comes time to commit, we are seeing some stability in our enrollment. However, our Pell Grant students, our students that are financially the neediest, are making some decisions about employment, since we have an incredibly strong and diverse economy here in South Florida, that some of our neediest students are choosing workforce right now versus enrollment. But we have seen a very steady trend of enrollment, very stable here at Florida Atlantic.
And Dr. Furton at FIU, you've got a lot of students who are also working at the same time. What are you seeing in enrollment?
Yeah, I think we're seeing similar to FAU. Our overall enrollments are pretty consistent at around 57,000 students. But what we're seeing is a trend of more students doing our fully online degrees, because the majority of our bachelor's degrees, we have an online option. That's been consistently increasing and accelerated a bit during the pandemic. And also, as was mentioned, when unemployment is high, then typically enrollments increase. And since unemployment is low at the moment, it's pretty typical that our enrollments stay pretty steady. So we're down slightly this year compared to last year. But part of that is because of the trends of our graduation rates, where we've been significantly increasing our four-year graduation rates here at FIU.
Mm. Dr. Wood, I know in the Florida Keys, things can change very quickly. I mean, all kinds of things can happen. You know, the Florida Keys can go through a lot of hurricanes. I mean, during this pandemic, at one point, they literally shut the road to the Keys. And if you didn't live there, you couldn't get in. But I mean, over these last couple of years, what have you seen at the College of the Florida Keys?
Our enrollment at the College of the Florida Keys has been on a trajectory of growth probably ever since Hurricane Irma. The offerings of this college are so geared toward our local economy here, with marine resource management and hospitality and tourism management, aside from the A degree. Some of the things that we do are just really so specific to being here that it really created still continued demand here. One of our biggest challenges here is for the students that don't live here is to find a place to live, to go to school here. You don't want to necessarily learn how to dive online, and I don't recommend I'd rather you go get into the ocean to learn how to dive. And so we found still the demand to be here for those things that we do excellently well here because of our geography and our great faculty here with the expertise that they have in those areas. Mm. So, and we've got like 1,200 students here. We're a different size school. It's a different experience than going to these larger schools. And that, while sometimes it hurts to be smaller in ways, it also is a help too. We have really low faculty to student ratios. And so it's really a different experience for the students here. So because of that, of what we specialize in and where we are, that has enabled us to maintain some growth. Another thing that happened this year that actually is a driver of our 8% growth this year is we opened a new center in Key Largo. Now, when you think about the service area of our college, we serve the entire Florida Keys. So you got 126 miles by about, you know, a quarter of a mile wide or less, depending on if you're on a bridge. It's a long way to serve. And we had been having relationships with high schools in different areas in the Middle and Upper Keys, but we were able to open a 40,000 square foot new facility right on the highway as soon as you get off the 18-mile stretch this past August. And that also has been a great driver for our growth this year.
You know, as you say, that is probably the most unique of all colleges and universities across the country because of the geography of the Florida Keys. So I'm hearing a mix so far. Janice, what about you in Broward College? Enrollment, up or down, what are you seeing? Who's enrolling? Who's not?
So we see, like many community colleges across the country, we're seeing a decline, particularly with our Pell-eligible students. We're seeing that they have the highest decline. However, we're also seeing growth, though, in our online modality. This year, we're actually seeing that we're increasing by a little under 10%. And for the first time, the fall of 2021, we're now seeing an increase over the previous year of our first time in college students. So they're coming back. And even this semester, they're up by 8%. So while we've seen some declines, we're starting to see some growth in some specific areas. You know, I agree with the rest of the panelists that, you know, for community college enrollment, when there's low unemployment, then we see a decline in enrollment. So with the pandemic coupled with the low unemployment rates, we know that's impacting our students and they're making a variety of choices. In addition to that, you know, we have a majority part-time enrolled students. Most of our students enroll more part-time than full-time. And so what we're encouraging them to do is as they're taking these opportunities for employment to continue to stay the course, because we know at the end of the day, from a long-term perspective, having some post-secondary education or a college degree will matter and will you know, enable their long-term opportunity in terms of making them more marketable and even having higher wages. So we're really working with them for them to understand that and to stick with us.
And look, I'm going to ask about the value of higher education because times have changed and people are questioning it. Again, talking with a panel of higher education officials, looking at this story that nationwide, 1 million fewer college students have enrolled nationwide. You know, how much of that is the pandemic? How much of that is the rising cost of college? Maybe you're considering going. Maybe you want to put it off for a little while. Share your thoughts. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial or text us 786-677-0767. Again, that's 786-677-0767. There is, again, this idea that pandemic has kind of turbocharged the decline in undergrads nationally, again, but enrollment has been declining for a while since 2012. And I'm wondering, does this kind of national trend change how the school plans for, you know, the future? Certain degree programs, for example. Let me start, you know, with Dr. Furton at FIU. Do you see, you know, a change in the way perhaps you set up your programs? Offerings of degrees, has that changed?
Yes, absolutely. Even before the global pandemic, we had been adding additional fully online degrees, particularly at the bachelor's level. And right now we have the majority of our undergraduate degrees have a fully online option. So we had seen actually most of really all of our incremental growth, if you go back, say the last 5 years, has been in our online programs, and we've seen a small decrease in our in-person courses. So I think a lot of students are choosing the modality of online in terms of convenience, even if they live here in the South Florida area, you know, with traffic and so forth to get to campuses. And so we've, I think this pandemic has accelerated that to the point that students saw the advantage of having a remote option. And so they're looking at the online degrees that we're offering. So our fastest growing program is actually in our Knight Foundation School of Computing and Information Sciences. That's where you can do a fully online bachelor's in computer science, and that's growing, really skyrocketing in enrollments in the online modality.
Have you had any cuts to programs? I mean, because I was watching and seeing over the last few years that colleges and universities had to cut programs or degrees because either it was just too expensive, not enough enrollment, or, you know, times are changing. Maybe certain things have to go away.
Yeah, we actually do that on a regular basis. And so we have sunsetted some degrees, not a large number that are lower enrolling, but we've also added completely new degrees, especially in the tech area. So we have new degrees like the Internet of Things and crime science and you know, really some more technically oriented degrees that we've added that have replaced some of the lower enrolling degrees that we had historically.
Anybody else here on the panel, have any of your institutions had to make cuts over these last few years, especially because of the pandemic? Anybody? No, nobody. So everybody, you haven't cut any, nobody at any of the schools have cut any of the programs. You've stayed the same or you're growing. Anybody can chime in. I want to hear.
Oh, sure. This is Frank Quid. I was thinking of, and several years ago, we actually sunsetted our computer science degree because we were finding that folks were not coming to this school to study computer science. For Broward or the other schools, I'm sure there is a very robust offering there. And so there are plenty of other opportunities for doing that. And a lot of it you can do online. And we were finding that the students that were choosing our school were coming here for things that were more specific for our market.
Mm. Janice or Maura, what about the two of you? What has changed? Things have to have changed over time, right?
Well, yes. Go ahead, Maura.
Please go ahead, Janice.
Okay. Well, we haven't cut any programs, and we have a process similar to what Frank described about how we review our programs year over year or every 5 years to see, you know, their marketability, et cetera. But what I will say is that we're focusing on, you know, a lot of the hot jobs in healthcare, you know, nursing, all those health science programs, aviation, marine, supply chain management, our business programs, we're really focused on making sure we're expanding capacity in those areas. And of course, IT. And in addition to that, we're growing the online in the online space. And we've also added what we're calling BC Online Live, in which faculty and students come together at the designated time, day and time, and through the virtual environment to host and to facilitate classes. And that's a growing interest for our students where it's not fully online, but they have the instructor present. And so we're really expanding in that area and making sure that we're offering that modality, not just a fully online, but that modality for the courses that are most in demand at the college.
And Maura, what did you want to chime in with?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I think to Dr. Furton's point, we haven't cut programs, but we have certainly retooled, refined, and really seen what the industry needs are. So we've expanded, for example, our hospitality certificate, making that available online. We have expanded our computer science program to offer a couple of different tracks within computer science, and our Bachelor of Computer Science program is available completely online. Within our nursing program, for example, we have added an accelerated bachelor's degree in nursing that is specifically for individuals who don't have a nursing background. So understanding what some of the needs are in the local economy as well as the national economy, and trying to tailor some of our programs that help folks that may be working or may be looking for more educational enrichment to help them advance in their current industry or their next interest of industry.
Again, this is such an interesting story because, again, we're looking at nationwide numbers, but every region is different. So we're getting a little bit of a feel here for what's happening in South Florida with all of our institutions. Again, I want to remind everyone of what we're talking about here. Again, the story out that there are a million fewer college students enrolling nationwide, but we're talking with South Florida college officials here about what's happening in our region. I'm talking with Maura Flaschner from FAU, Broward College's Vice President of Student Services, Janice Stubbs, Vice President of Advancement, Dr. Frank Wood at the College of the Florida Keys, and Dr. Ken Furton, Provost at FIU. And we'd love to hear from you if, again, maybe you're considering going to school. Are you going to put it off for a little while? What has the pandemic done in your thinking and how you're preparing? Is a college education still worth the cost? Or maybe you're looking for something different. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Post your comments or you can text us 786-677-0767. Earlier today, again, I spoke with John Haller. He's the Vice President for Enrollment Management at UM. And we asked him about tuition and affordability.
Last year was the first year we met the full financial need for all admitted students. So regardless of socioeconomics, we met their full financial need. So we have shifted the allocation of financial aid from more merit-based to more need-based aid so we can attract a broader socioeconomics background of student. And I think for that reason, you'll see that broader, not just ethnic, but socioeconomic diversity at the institution. We put practices in place to make it accessible to all different kinds of students.
All right. College costs. This is a big one for a lot of folks, and college debt is huge in this country. Maura, what is FAU doing? What has it been doing to try to keep it affordable for students, to help students?
Absolutely something that we're discussing every day on our campus. The State University System of Florida has not raised tuition in several years. So our tuition costs at the university and any fees affiliated with the services provided have really remained constant. And so the value and the return on investment of a state university system education has really upheld its value. The other living costs, I would say, in terms of housing and meal plans have also been held relatively stable. Increases have really not gone up more than 1-3% in the last several years, understanding that living on campus is a great option for a number of our students who allow them to be in very close proximity to their studies. And so we've really tried to keep costs stable. That includes book costs, renting of books, buying of books, laboratory fees, and the like.
Okay. And so, yeah, as you said, tuition hasn't gone up in the state of Florida, but housing throughout the state of Florida has gone up, and that could be a challenge for a lot of folks. Dr. Wood, down in the Florida Keys, housing is a big, big challenge. How are the students getting around that?
It is one of our greatest challenges. And I wanted to echo, yes, Mara's comments there. I don't think we've raised tuition in a decade here. And I don't know anything in the world that has not gone up in the last 10 years or even just the last month. So it's created quite a few interesting challenges when you're not raising tuition, but the rest of the world is going up around you. Housing in the Florida Keys has always been a hot topic for the past, I guess, 20 years or so. We have one dormitory and it has 100 beds, and it has been full for as long as I can remember. And it fills up usually in the spring for the following fall, and all of the students are there on annual contracts. It is one of the greatest challenges for us in that 30% of our applications now are coming from out of state, and there's not enough space for them here. And when you go to the open market to find a place to live here, you could be looking at, you know, $2,500 for a one bedroom apartment that's not really big. You can pack some roommates in there. So we're looking hopefully on the horizon that we would have an additional dormitory so that we could bring more students from away in.
That's, I mean, that looks, for a professional, that's a lot of money. I can't imagine for a student. Janice, I mean, you know, you have students who are working while they're also going to school, but, you know, they're paying more right now. So what's added the challenge perhaps in some of your students? They're looking at cost of living and they're saying, you know what, I can work more right now and make more money. Why go to school?
Well, I think it's still important for them to go to school, in all honesty, because when we're talking about long-term benefits for post-secondary education, you know, we know that students who have some post-secondary education, that they have more opportunity for long-term growth in terms of, you know, how they manage their incomes and opportunity for higher income. So we absolutely are encouraging our students to really continue to even take one or two classes. And many of our students go part-time one or two classes and they still finish. But what I also want to add is that, you know, we're ranked as one of the most affordable in the state. And through higher education relief funds, we've been able to provide students up to $2,000 in emergency funding in support of housing and all of that. And we also have our Seahawk Outreach Services, which is the department at the college, which connects students with, you know, housing resources within our community. And through the college, we've opened a food pantry and have had food distribution across the college in support of our students, as well as even support with childcare through a grant that we've had at the college, because we know these are the various needs. So even although our tuition is ranked one of the lowest in the state, we know they have additional expenses. And so we try to work with them as best as we can to provide support through either resources within the community, resources throughout the college, scholarship opportunities through our foundation and the like.
That is a lot of help right there. Provost Ferton, I want to finish up with you here before we go to break. You know, I mean, FIU's been relatively inexpensive for a lot of students. And of course, you have UM down the street, and that's a private institution and a lot more expensive. But again, costs of living in South Florida, Miami, is very high. What are the challenges, briefly, that you hear from your students?
Yeah, I mean, similar to what you've heard from the other guests, is the Florida Board of Governors actually has the net tuition to the student for a four-year degree, 120 credits, as one of our performance metrics that we get evaluated on. So we're always focused on trying to reduce the cost to the students by reducing the number of, say, repeats of courses and the excess hours that they may take, things of that nature. And we actually, at the net tuition for this past year at FIU for a four-year degree was less than $4,000 total. So that low tuition, and you know, we've been keeping the cost down to the student. But as you say, you know, it's a great point, is the housing costs and the cost of living can be considerable, you know, significantly more than the tuition. I believe that's part of a driver for the online degree as well. So if people can, you know, perhaps stay with their parents or live in a lower cost of living area, and take an online degree. I think that's a part of the driving factor because of the high cost of living particularly here in the Miami area where our largest campus is located.
And I want to ask about, you know, is online learning going to be the thing of the future? I mean, we're forced into it during these last couple of years, and I'm wondering if maybe that's the way people are going to start going. But we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with our panel of guests talking about higher education and why nationwide there are few people enrolling in college. Again, find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. More on this coming right up. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Again, we want to continue this conversation with our panel of higher education officials talking about why college enrollment nationally is down. But as we've been hearing, it depends. Some schools are seeing a decline. Others are still growing. Here in South Florida, what's happening? And again, we want to hear from you. If you are thinking about going back to school or going to school for the first time, what's going through your mind as you're preparing for that? Again, you can text us 786-677-0767. Maybe you got into the workforce and you're making good money because they're paying more now, and you're going to put college off for a while. Tell us what you're thinking. Again, I'm talking with Maura Flaschner from FAU, Janice Stubbs from Broward College, Dr. Frank Wood from the College of the Florida Keys, and Dr. Ken Furton from FIU. We talked about this online, the online learning, and, you know, look, we were forced into it from K through 12 in college and work. We had to go home and do everything from home. Some people liked it and some people hated it. But what is this changing in higher education going forward? Janice, I'll start with you. More offerings online, more people, are they asking for offerings online? Is that the future of higher ed?
No, we're as the positivity rate increases, we're seeing more of a demand for online classes as well as our online live classes, as I mentioned before. But we're still seeing folks who are, you know, interested in the in-person classes. And so we still have quite a few sections for in-person. So what we're doing is making sure we offer a wide variety of courses in the various modalities, in-person, online, live, fully online. We also have blended in which students have, you know, where they come in for one section of the course, but the remainder of the course is online. And so we want to make sure that we're providing that flexibility for students to make decisions based on what's happening in their lives. But I think for the future, that's what we have to offer, is that flexibility so that they have choices.
You know, the other thing, too, is not just the online options, but look, people's priorities are changing. They had to change during the pandemic. And I'm wondering if students are not enrolling in college, do we have to assume that they're out in the labor market working? They're choosing a job, perhaps? Maura, I mean, you said that FAU is growing, but look, right now, some folks, again, they might be making more money because companies are paying more. You know, maybe they're like, hey, I'll put college off for a while. Do you see that happening? Do you see that option as a challenge?
Absolutely. We know that it's a very robust economy down here in South Florida. And so we're certainly paying attention to the wages as well as the decisions that students are making. You know, we called many students this fall to remind them about registration, talk with them about their plans, talk with them about advisement and how to stay on track for their degree. And some of the feedback we did hear was that they were going to stay in the labor market a little bit longer. This was what they felt was in the best interest short term for their family, for themselves. They felt like current income was going to allow them to then come back and finish some classes. And so that's certainly something we pay attention to. And we know that some students need to choose or feel like that's the right decision at the right time. So we're hearing a little bit of both. They want to stay in school. And then we also have a number of students who are choosing work full time instead of part time, perhaps.
And the other thing, too, is you had a number of students during the pandemic who just put college off for a while. Dr. Wood, have you seen those students now say, oh, now I'm coming back? That adds to the number of people who are going to enroll anyway. Do you see that happening? Because that could be a challenge.
Yeah, I was thinking, too, yes, back to what Mara was talking about with reaching out to the students. We had to do that a lot as well, too. Most of our students are part-time, so they've got down in the Keys one or two jobs, and they're juggling school and sometimes families. And it was important to us to reach out to them to make sure that there was they knew the extra support that was available. Thanks to the CARES Act funding that came through, we were able to provide financial support to students to help with rent, with the electric bill, with the babysitter, with you name it, the things that of life that get in the way when a student is trying to be faced with the decision of, am I going to work and take care of my family and myself, or am I going to go to school? And luckily, with that funding, we were able to help some students bridge that gap and continue on their path now, because once they stop school, it's harder to get them back. Life gets in the way, and it's much easier if we can to just keep them on that path and retain them now. And so we've had a good deal of success with that. I did want to say one other thing about just the heart of the college mission is workforce education. And one thing that we've had quite a bit of need for in our market and success with is an apprenticeship program for construction trades, for HVAC, for electric, for carpentry, for plumbing, those sort of careers. So when you're talking about the college experience, it's not just always going to get an Associate of Arts degree or working toward a bachelor's in a given discipline, but sometimes it is learning those trades that are so critical to each of our economies. And there's certainly, I know at least down here, there's not enough of the employees in those areas.
So that brings up an interesting point is, you know, are people thinking, why a 4-year degree? I want to learn a trade, and I could do that in half the time, and the world's going to change in 10 years anyway. So Dr. Furton, is that a challenge too when you're looking at potential students? You're thinking, why am I going to school for 4 years? Let me learn a trade. I can do this faster.
Yeah, I do believe that we're anticipating that will increasingly be a trend. Although, you know, the data shows that particularly for students who come from lower income backgrounds, that bachelor's degree is still the greatest indicator of upward economic mobility in their lifetime. Many students may want to start with a, you know, rather than going for a full degree. So we offer micro credentials or what they call digital badges that can be stackable so that students can, or learners can start taking badges and then maybe eventually do courses and then work towards a degree so that they would have that option. And I believe a big part of it is, as was mentioned, is the flexibility that, you know, some people like to buy their cars online. Some people like to go in and do the old fashioned way at the dealership. And we found that there's a preference among some students that want the convenience of the online. As Janice mentioned, we're doing things like the online live, and we just launched a Lee Kaplan immersive studio for altered reality where we do volumetric capture. So eventually I see a sort of a digital metaverse, which is much more immersive than what we currently call online.
Yeah. And I wanted to jump in. We are hearing from some of our listeners. We got a text in from a Barbara J in Miami asking, curious about graduate school applications. How has the pandemic affected applications for PhDs? If I'm not mistaken, please help me here. FIU, FAU, you do offer PhDs. I don't think everybody here does, right? Mora, FAU offers PhDs?
Absolutely. Yep. Masters and PhDs. And we are seeing an increase.
An increase. Okay.
In applications. Absolutely. I think the other part of what we've seen with education is at the graduate level, we have had some changes in terms of capacity and adding online programs. So it's more accessible as well.
Okay. Dr. Furton, FIU does have PhDs, masters and PhDs, right?
Yeah, similar. Yeah, we offer both, and we have seen an increase in requests for master's and PhD programs, both in person as well as online, particularly at the master's level.
All right. I want to ask each of you in a short period of time here briefly this question, this idea. If you've got a student and their family right now thinking about the future, you know, they're worried about the debt, but, you know, look, we've all been told, having that degree is good for your future. What's the advice? One piece of advice that you give somebody right now as to how they prepare for that future. Mora, let me start with you. What do you tell them?
Well, as my colleagues have shared, I would reinforce the message that over the course of their lifetime, a four-year degree is a tremendous equalizer for social and upward mobility in terms of potential for earnings and really making a difference for their family. So we'd want to have a conversation, obviously, with that individual student about their passions and their desires. But I really would encourage the family to consider the value and the return on an investment in a four-year degree that would happen over time for that family.
All right. Well, Janice, I mean, you know, again, going on that, what the advice that you give a family, what's the thing that they have, if they're thinking about money especially, what's the thing that you should be looking at most to make this decision?
Well, I mean, we have opportunities for students to apply for grants and scholarships at the college. And the truth is most of our students can really pay for their education through scholarships and grants. And of course, their loans, but mostly grants and scholarships. So I don't think they should worry about that. You know, through our admissions process, we support onboarding through the support of completing the federal application, the free application for federal financial aid. And so we can provide support with that. But I want to really emphasize the value of post-secondary education and really understanding that through Broward College, there are alternative ways for students to start their education. For example, they can start through continuing education and then continue into credit programs through which we're providing articulation within the college. So if a student completes a continuing education or a non-credit course, that they may be able to get some credits through a certificate in business and industry and those kinds of areas.
There are a lot of options is what I'm hearing. Dr. Wood, briefly, look, if you go back and talk to your former self, what advice do you give him?
I just totally second Janice's take on this as far as the funds that are available. Luckily, I did not have to do student loans when I was going through. Actually, I did for my doctorate, but I was able to finally pay that off. But there are funds available through, like at our school, we have the college's foundation. We raise money to provide extra support to students that it's above and beyond what's available through the federal student financial aid. And to give the student the hope and the idea that with a little legwork on their behalf of uncovering these funds, and they're not really that deep to find, that you can do this without going into debt.
All right.
I really work on students not trying to take out loans.
All right. And Provost Furton, I'll put you on the spot here in 30 seconds. I'm a student. I'm thinking, you know what? I can learn a lot on my own. I want to be an entrepreneur anyway. Why do I want all this debt? Maybe I don't need college. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, as others have said, it's still in the long term, even though many fields where they're going to be working, we don't even offer degrees yet. I would still say that getting that bachelor's degree will put you in a better position for long-term employment. But you may want to think of doing a technical degree, you know, computer science degree or an area where there's such rapid growth, which would, you know, put you in an even better position to at least be working towards a technical degree, or getting that four-year degree in a technical area will probably set you up for life.
All right. You know what? If I did it over again, I would go to college. I just, knowing what I know, I'd have different questions, and I definitely would be thinking about the money very differently. I want to thank my panel, Dr. Ken Furton, Provost at FIU, Dr. Frank Wood, Vice President of Advancement at the College of the Florida Keys, Janice Stubbs, Broward College's Vice President of Student Services, and Maura Flashner, Executive Director of Undergraduate Admission at FAU. Thank you all of you for your insight today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. And again, we'd love to hear from you. You can always find us on Facebook or Twitter. Let us know your thoughts as you prepare for that next step in your education. Well, still to come, let's keep talking about education. And I'm going to introduce you to our new education reporter here at WLRN. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. You know, there's not a dull moment in education news these days. Two South Florida school districts are looking for new leaders. There's COVID, politics, and we heard from teachers on Sundial earlier this week. Student behavior is a challenge. Teacher shortages are taking a toll on kids' education. Higher education has been changed by the pandemic. Virtual learning is pushing some further to question the cost of college. And of course, as we just talked about, nationally, enrollment is down at universities. Kate Payne is WLRN's new education reporter. What a time to join us, Kate. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you came at just the right time. Everything is happening. No, this is great. I saw you for the first time yesterday, and Miami-Dade Public Schools looking for a new superintendent. You got thrown into the fire right away.
Yeah, that was my first day, was that most recent special meeting. So it's just, you know, drinking from a fire hose.
How long did that meeting last, by the way?
It was about 5.5 hours. So
and that's short.
Yeah.
For Miami-Dade schools, that's short. So
that's what I'm told.
Congratulations. So. Your Twitter bio, wait a minute. Let me get this right. You called yourself Florida woman?
a Florida woman.
A Florida woman.
Yeah. So
explain, please.
So I'm from Florida. I'm from North Florida, partially from the other Havana, Havana, Florida in Gadsden County, but primarily from Tallahassee. And, you know, I love the state. It's an incredibly beautiful place. And when I left most recently to work in Iowa for Iowa Public Radio, it was, you know, having to sort of defend the state in a new way.
Oh, you don't even have to tell me. I know that.
Yeah. So I think just through that process, you know, sort of reclaiming the pride and love and ownership of this state, where people from all around the world love Florida and they come here. They know. You know,
oh, yeah.
People can talk, but they know.
I know. Everywhere I go, I have to defend the Sunshine State. What got you into journalism?
Yeah, so initially I studied at Florida State. I went to the film school.
I will not hold that against you.
I know.
Go Gators.
Have to forgive me. But making narrative and documentary films, you know, editing and writing, really hands-on work. And then as I was coming through towards the end of the program, you know, it was a really turbulent time. It was around 2015 when I graduated, and Ferguson was happening. There were lots of, you know, police killings, and I was seeing this incredible on-the-ground reporting, this work of journalism, you know, folks using social media in new ways, bringing in audiences in new ways, and it was just like I want to do that. And I want to go, you know.
Your first gig was at our sister station, WFSU.
Yes, in WFSU, and just sort of worked my way up from there, covering state politics and education, environment, just all across the board.
Telling stories, though, with audio, how is that for you? How is that different than, you know, what you were studying in film?
So it was actually quite similar. One of our editing professors talked about how sound is the first sense that we develop in utero. Maybe some physicians can, you know, talk about that, but it's just an innate sense. It's a powerful sense. It's something that we feel in our gut. And so for me, there's always been a power in that, a power of the human voice that is just different. I think it just has so much capacity to help us understand each other and to build empathy in a way that's just fundamentally different than other mediums.
Now, you say you love Florida, you're from Florida, but then you went to Iowa.
I did.
Of all places. I mean, look, that's a fascinating. I've had the chance to work in a lot of other places, and I think for journalists that's important because you need to see what life is like outside of the state. But the time that you spent in Iowa, what was that like? Because that is really different.
It's different, yeah. It's, spoiler alert, very cold. Like, so cold, sometimes they have to shut down the schools because you can't let kids wait at the bus stop. It's so cold. So that was an adjustment. But the reason I went to Iowa was it was ahead of the presidential election in 2020. And Iowa, as folks may remember, plays this totally outsized, powerful role in the presidential nominating process, the Iowa caucuses. Iowa goes first. And so it's almost comical the level of attention that Iowa gets from these presidential candidates. Like, the place is crawling with them, you know. For some Iowans, it gets a little annoying. Like,
what was most memorable covering the Democratic caucuses for this last election?
I mean, it was just, part of it was the sheer scale of the field. Like, it truly, you know, in one day you're going from Bernie Sanders to Elizabeth Warren to, you know, Kamala Harris, all in towns of like sometimes 3,000 people, 4,000 people. Like, it's, and you're right there with them in the coffee shop, in the library. It's unlike anywhere else for people who are engaged in politics, and for a political reporter to have that access is, it's like nowhere else.
So you were covering politics there, and now you're covering education for us. I mean, do you have a goal as to like what ultimately you would love to be covering, or for as a reporter, does it really matter?
So for me, it's really working towards investigative work. That's something that I'm really excited to do more of here, is bringing together all of these different threads of issues and coverage areas that I've worked on in the past into education, which is, you know, it's, when is education not important? But it feels like right now, how could it be more important? Education is everything. It's revolutionary. So just hoping to bring together not just, you know, narrative and people-focused, people-centered stories that help people understand what's going on, but bringing in investigative elements that show you the fuller picture in a more powerful way.
Do you have people, anybody that you look up to, you know, journalists that you admire or respect, or that have had impact on the way you do your job?
Sure. So I'm a big fan of Lulu Garcia Navarro. I was so sad when she left NPR. That was a blow. But
her and three other very well-known women left NPR recently.
Yeah. Women of color, yeah, as well. But for Lulu, I mean, she just has such a grace in her presence on air. She seems to bring so much of herself and such compassion and sincerity, which I really, really appreciated. But then she's also this accomplished war correspondent. Like, she's just an incredible, you know, force to be reckoned with. Another person I really admire is someone at the Washington Post, Hannah Dreyer, who, if folks have read, you know, she's done a lot of coverage of like FEMA and these systemic, really problematic issues in government, but she tells it through the lens of one single person generally. Mm. And it's like you're in the room with them. It's so powerful.
I got to ask you, when you were in Iowa, you worked on this, on a series on book ban in prisons. That sounds fascinating. I didn't get to see this story, but briefly tell me about it.
Yeah. So in my time in Iowa, I really put a focus on covering prisons and criminal justice. And so what happened there was the Department of Corrections banned any friends or family or third parties from sending books into the prison. And it was a huge issue for inmates who, books are everything for some of them. You know, I was talking to one person who, you know, they're in solitary confinement. They stay sane by reading a book a day. And by banning friends and family from being able to send them in, it made it unaffordable for inmates themselves to buy these books. You know, if you're making hopefully a dollar an hour, folks who have a loved one in prison know prison is expensive, the fees and the taxes that are put on. So it was,
as I mentioned, we threw you right into the fire right away. What are you working on right now?
So keeping tabs on the Miami-Dade superintendent process. We have Broward as well at the same time. And, mm-hmm, you know, really thinking about the legacy of Alberto Carvalho as he leaves in about 2 weeks is huge. We were talking earlier about the implications of the critical race theory bill moving through the Capitol right now. But I've also been in touch with some student activists who have a lot of concerns about COVID in the classroom even now. So, but always open to tips and story ideas. Listeners, please reach out.
Absolutely. And I will say this, that, I mean, you know Florida. You know what Florida's like. I don't have to tell you, but I do agree. We had some years ago Joshua Johnson on the program, and he said it best because he started his career here. Once you've been a reporter in Miami, but it's, you know, South Florida in general, from Palm Beach County all the way down to the Keys, you've been here for a couple of years. You could work anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, you do this market, you could do anything, but you will never be bored, Kate. How about that?
That's great.
Kate Payne, WLRN's new education reporter. You're going to hear a lot of her, not only on Morning Edition and All Things Considered, but you will be a regular here on the show. I'm going to set that chair for you. Kate, such a pleasure. Welcome, by the way.
Thank you so much.
And that is our program for this Thursday, January 20th. Katie Munoz is our lead producer. Leslie Ovalle is our producer and social media editor. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Our news director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. And Jessica Bakeman is our senior news editor. WLRN's interim program director and technical supervisor is Peter J. Meritz. Our theme music is by the Miami Afro-Cuban funk band Palo at gopalo.com. Well, coming up next week on the program, we're going to check on monoclonal antibody treatment centers opening up around South Florida. Where are they and how do you navigate the options? What info is out there? We're back live on Monday. Have a wonderful Friday, a great weekend. Like I always say, stay safe. Take care of each other, please. The program is made possible in part by support from Miami Cancer Institute.
WLRN Public Media.